Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We're going to switch gears here and talk about President Barack Obama's speech. And I, after listening to it yesterday, watching him on TV, I was not going to go stand in the cold in Washington. I was much more comfortable in my own home, in my comfortable couch, watching the inauguration. It was interesting because the speech was, and we'll play pieces of it, the speech was different, I thought, than some of the speeches that he had given in the past. It was different than the first administration. It was more, this is who we are. We're going to fight for climate change, raising the issues of the gay community, which he didn't do in any strength the last time, talking clearly about pushing an agenda. Will it be real or not? We'll see. But we're going to talk about that. We are in the studio here. Michelle has stayed with us this rest of this program. Always good to have you in. She's staying for 2 hours because she's been so long. She has to.
I missed you so.
Missed you too. Good to have you in the studio. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is back with us once again. Assistant Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Must be a UMBC day. Good to have you in the studio.
Yes, it is.
And Tyrone Keyes is with us in the studio, political analyst and author. And you can find more about him and his latest novel. You wrote a novel?
Yes.
Get out. So
we'll talk more about it.
Quantum Dawn on Facebook at Tyrone E. Keyes, Jr. And good to have you all with us. And we are waiting now to, I think we'll be joined as well by E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, who is now journalist in residence here at Morgan State University. Welcome all. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join in on this conversation. And so the speech yesterday, I'm curious, initial reactions to what you heard, and then we'll jump into it. Shipp, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
I appreciate you taking time. So I know I owe you a phone call, so I owe everybody a little call on this panel today. So you're not alone. Kimberly, you'll call too, but you're in the studio as well. So, but just initial reactions, and then I'm going to get into some heart of what this might have meant. Tyrone?
Well, we were discussing this briefly in the green room, and I was explaining that I don't watch these things. I wait for the transcript and I read it, so that way I won't be colored by emotion or any of the pomp and circumstance. And what you got this morning was either this is the greatest thing since Shakespeare wrote Hamlet, or this is the worst thing in the world ever.
Really.
Okay, there's no in between. But I think that it's important to view the president's speech in the light of history. A lot of conservatives are saying, well, you know, he wasn't specific enough. He didn't come out and say exactly what's going to happen. But if you read inaugural speeches, especially from second-term presidents, they never do. It's an opportunity to come out, and you're not specific. There are usually a lot of vagaries, a lot of, you know, hopeful language. So I think that, you know, that's what he did here. His opportunity to lay out a specific agenda comes later on in the State of the Union. I do have issues with the speech, which we'll get into, but I think that the criticism of him for not being more specific with his language is unfair, and it's ignorant of history.
Shipp?
Well, I agree with some of that. The inaugural speech is part of a weekend of celebration. And I think it's not the time to sit down with a laundry list of things that the president wants to accomplish in the remaining time he has in office. He did a great job of delivering a speech that reminded many people why they liked him in the first place, why they flocked to him in 2007 and 2008. That Obama had largely been lost in his first term. So I think the call he issued fired up those people who have been most supportive of him over the years, but who had been a bit disappointed by what was accomplished in that first term.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt.
I would agree. I think the rhetoric was very familiar to 2008 and 2009. I don't know if it's actualized, but certainly the rhetoric is fairly consistent with that time period. And I also think that it's more than appropriate to talk about the speech as celebratory, as ceremonial, and the fact that the focus is not about specific politics, although there are areas of the speech where clearly he is making political stances. I think clearly he was simply saying, as Americans, as all of us, as citizens, that there is a place that we need to strive toward, and now is the time for that to happen.
And it's so my perspective is just a little bit obtuse. I love the pomp and circumstance. I want to see all of it. It feeds, it's fodder for me as an entertainer, as a stand-up comedian, but it's also informative for me. It informs how, you know, as a thinking person, how will I juxtapose what I've seen with my eyes, what I've heard with my ears? How will I be responsible on stage when I deal with this content? Because I will deal with the content. And then I think what is interesting about all of it is that I saw a bolder President Obama. I saw a second-term president yesterday. I saw a president who basically said, you can love me or leave me alone. And I totally appreciate that. That's something that I think he had to tread lightly in his first term. So I was very, very pleased with the tone of his speech, but at the same time, I enjoyed the breaks where there was cheering. I enjoyed the times where he took the pregnant pause for, you know, those reactions. I find that fascinating. When and one thing that really just did it for me, and I know this is probably going to sound like, okay, you must not understand speech writing, but it felt as if he'd been waiting to say some of these things for the last 4 years, and he just had the moxie and the ability and really the boldness to say some of it. So my perspective is just a little bit different.
Well, a lot of this isn't new at all. A lot of what the president had to say yesterday was actually goes back as far as Theodore Roosevelt. There was some Bill Clinton influences in this. Even some shades of George W. Bush when he talked about how America stands with the desire for democracy throughout the world. So a lot of this, and he's not the only one that's guilty of that. In my study, it seems as though presidents usually do a lot of borrowing from the previous administrations on, you know, in building their speeches for the inaugural.
Isn't that kind of expected? The whole idea of this is the peaceful transition of power from one administration to the other, from one generation to another. And I think it's not a bad idea to use some of what other presidents have said and done as kind of the connecting tissue to remind us that there are no great changes most of the time between presidential administrations.
Well, I also think it's a tad naive for us to think that any of it is original, because it is pulling off of each other. And I think one of the points that President Obama mentioned yesterday was this whole idea of affirming the promise of a democracy. And I think that is consistent language that should pervade any president if that is what our goal is toward. And the idea that he is saying this is something that hasn't been actualized yet, but we're still ongoing, suggests that we are building upon all those prior to his presidency.
And he could use different illustrations of that. And that was what was so affirming for many people, not just black people, but Latinos, many of whom fall into the immigrant category. He talked about immigration reform, immigration rights, and definitely for gays and lesbians. It was a wonderful affirmation for them that they, too, are part of this ongoing quest for justice, for freedom, for those things that we were promised as far back as the Declaration of Independence.
I mean, when our speech first started out, and I was listening to it on television, I was kind of yawning, to say the truth. And then when, but the yawn changed because I start, he started raising some issues that, and we'll hear some clips when we come back from break in about a minute, because when he started talking about Selma, Stone Mountain, I mean Stonewall, and Seneca Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, that throwing that in, and that became, that, and his climate change piece, which we'll hear a little bit of, was also something fairly significant, I think, that he said that he hadn't said before. And the way he talked about, in actually a very simple sentence, about those who built this country and those who are going to build it and what they should expect from government. He was setting up, without saying it, he was setting up his agenda for the speech coming on February the 12th, I think.
Mm.
And it was less of a reach out, blue and red come together, than it was people were asking the question, is this going to be his legacy term? Is this what he's going to attempt? We're going to talk about all that when we come back from this very brief break with our guest, jump right into a clip, and let our guest kind of discern, and also go to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Junior, you're the first caller up. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are looking and talking about President Barack Obama's inaugural speech, what it said, what it didn't say, what it might mean. We are joined, continuing, and of course, this hour, Michelle, the indie comedy, indie mom of comedy, stays with us, author, community organizer, actor, comedian. We're also joined here in studio, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, assistant professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Tyrone Keyes, political analyst, author, and has just written a new novel called Quantum Dawn that you can find on Facebook at Tyrone E. Keyes, Jr. And E.R. Shipp is with us, 1996 Pulitzer Prize winner, who is now a journalist in residence here, an associate professor of journalism right here at Morgan State University, 410-319-8888. Let's jump right to the clip, and we'll comment on it as soon as we hear it.
The most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still. Just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall, to hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth. It is now our generation's task to carry on what those pioneers began. For our journey is not complete until our wives, our mothers, and daughters can earn a living equal to their efforts. Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Our journey is not complete until no citizen is forced to wait for hours to exercise the right to vote. Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity, until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country. Our journey is not complete until all our children, from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Appalachia to the quiet lanes of Newtown, know that they are cared for and cherished and always safe from harm.
Well, there are a few things in that thing that I think that we're here. I'd like to hear some thoughts. I mean, one was the emphasis he put on gay rights, which was his kind of...
I'd like to hear the precedent, since Tyrone said, you said this, none of this content is is new in terms of other presidents.
No, I didn't say none of it. I said a lot of it is not new.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's new. Yeah, because that to me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Woodrow Wilson wasn't talking about gay rights. I mean, we all know that.
And he talked
Woodrow
about
Wilson
it.
Wasn't about his rights, but his own.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But his own rights, absolutely. Yeah. And everybody else that looked like him. But the deal is to hear him say that at inauguration, where it's not just the folks in the United States who are paying attention. The entire world is paying attention to the United States of America. Whether we can reconcile that or not, it's not good or bad. That's just a reality. So the entire world is hearing the leader of this country advocate for the rights of gays and lesbians. I believe that was unprecedented.
It was clearly unprecedented. I mean, in that, you know, the definition of unprecedented is it has never been done before
by
a president of the United States. So that's clear. And I think that, the electorate needs to start being able to separate these social issues and rights for people as human beings are one thing that we all as human beings should be able to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are another set of issues. When we talk about economic rights, okay, and they are indiscriminate of what color you are and what sexual orientation you are, or what age you are, okay. So I would have liked to hear more in terms of that aspect, because I don't care if you're gay, straight, old, young, black, white.
You
need
purple,
to have the
if
money.
If you say purple, I'm jumping across that table.
Well, if there are purple people out there, but hold on, let me finish. But one color we all have in common is green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of what I would have liked to, hear more of, which was the speech was light on economic anything.
Oh, the speech was only about 18 minutes, folks. Come on. He couldn't do an encyclopedic speech that was satisfying.
I think that's where I am with
well,
this.
Well, why couldn't he? I mean,
Wikipedia.
Roosevelt did.
I mean, it was 18 minutes. It was supposed to make us feel good about where we are now and to give hope to those who support him and his values, to give hope that some of these items will be accomplished on this agenda list. It was not to sit down and give you line by line, detail by detail, how he's going to...
And I think I made that point... I think I made that point initially. I made that point initially that is not what the speech is designed to do.
Right.
However,
light on these things, he has to be.
However,
wait, you interrupted the ship. Let her finish the thought. Go ahead.
Ship. I was going to say he has to be light on these things if you want to. He's giving us a sample of the things that he's going to be pushing for, and he was not, as some Republicans were quick to say, he was not saying all of this in a partisan way. He made it very strong, made it very clear that he strongly believed in certain things, but he also talked about the fact that we must find a way to work together to resolve some of these issues. So he wasn't just getting up there giving a speech for Democrats or even for the progressive wings of the Democratic Party. He was putting some things out there that I think people of goodwill can grab onto and try to move us in the direction that he's saying we need to go.
And I think that essentially we agree. I made the point initially that the speech cannot get bogged down with specifics. However, just as he spoke of gay rights and mentioned some of the nebulous ideas around that and that he's an advocate for it, I would have liked to see some, even if it was vague, language with regard to that one thing we all have in common, which is the economy.
But how would that have satisfied anybody's palate for that conversation?
Well,
if it were just an inference or if it were just a mention, I think I agree more with what Ship is saying, because there's a time and place for that. That conversation is so loaded in terms of what it's...
That's not a conversation, but it's not a conversation.
No,
and
I'm not suggesting it's a conversation,
right.
but that notion, the whole economic, the green factor that we both agree that that's something we all have in common, that happens next month.
That's right.
In this moment, this was a time for us to get excited about what had taken place, about his second term, about history again being made, and just kind of stay in that moment.
Well,
I think.
I'll agree with Ship that this is an opportunity for you to set the agenda for what we're moving into. And I would hope that the president, in building his legacy, would definitely want us to be moving into more economic prosperity.
Before I jump in,
I think he does. He's made that quite clear, I think.
Not in the speech, however.
Just a second. Like,
so in the speech you keep saying it, but he couldn't do everything in the speech.
I think I enjoyed probably most, and I remember as I watched the inauguration speech, but then even after I read the text of the speech later in the evening, I think the last part of the clip that was played is most poignant to me, where the focus does return back to the future generation, to the children, and the fact that he was bold enough, and I will say bold enough because I have not heard such language in recent inaugural speeches, in which you've got a president that mentions the streets of Detroit, the hills of Appalachia, and the quiet lanes of Newtown. And clearly, we know the Newtown references because it's a very contemporary and current issue. But these other two polarities that are presented to us really shed light on recognizing what's happening in our urban centers, but what's also happening in the forgotten places of the Appalachia. And I appreciated hearing the return back to our future generations and our children, and recognizing that we have a leader that, at least in rhetoric right now, that's all I've got to go on, at least with his rhetoric, is saying these are the folks that we need to be looking to and concerned about.
And in that, by the way, he was echoing Martin Luther King Jr. in some ways.
Absolutely.
And so that was another way that he was borrowing, if you will, from the past, but he was also just tying it together. So I heard a lot of Dr. King in him. He never said the whole name, Martin Luther King.
No, he did not.
But he did refer to a king,
right?
You know, saying something about justice in America. So he was very poetic and very circumspect in some ways, but I think it was powerful in the way he did it.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I also think that although in a very roundabout way and not the specifics that Tyrone was looking for about the economy, the instances or the inferences to American exceptionalism, to the Protestant work ethic, to the fact that we need to, his direct quote, new responses to new challenges, were all inferences, at least for my ears, of talk of what needs to come and the work that needs to be done to really re-energize our economy and make us more productive.
And I will agree with Dr. Moffitt. But one thing now, because we've gotten away from what I originally said. I don't think inaugural speeches are opportunities for specifics.
Right.
I do think they're opportunities to talk about the vagaries of what your agenda will be.
Let me see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. And Junior, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
First of all, I'm the president. I'm going to start with the governor. I mean, the mayor of the city right here, Baltimore, and start with the governor of Netflix. Both of them should be kicked out of office. They gave up.
Junior, we're talking about the president's speech right now, not about the mayor and the governor, though.
Okay. Well, this is how it is. Now, he got two children, the president. When he can't tell his daughter that it's all right to marry another woman, get that chimp out the office.
All right, Junior, thank you. Let's go to Chris and Whittlon. You're on the air.
Good evening, everybody.
Hi, Chris.
Good evening.
I understand and I agree that the president can't touch on everything in an inaugural address, but when he touches on a few things, he kind of opens the door for people who aren't mentioned to say, well, what about my issue? And since I got the emails and the phone calls and I did support him with my vote, I believe I should be able to voice my issue is that he has not addressed, he addressed gay rights, which I agree with. He addressed women's suffrage, I agree with. And immigration, I agree with. But how do you not address the people that look just like you, black males? And this has been an ongoing thing for me since he's been president, is that the only direct address that I heard, maybe I missed it, was the step up to fatherhood, which I agreed with, and the Trayvon Martin issue, which I agree with. But it's like when we look at the unemployment numbers in our community, when we look at the issues with law, there's so many issues surrounding us and I'm not, I was never expecting him to be the black president, but it seems like it's almost like we're being ignored.
Chris, let me let's wrestle with this for a minute. This is what you just said. I think the words you just used, you didn't expect him to be the black president, but didn't expect you to be ignored. We had the conversation twice this morning, one in our production meeting and another one, a conversation I had on the phone with some people, a conversation over the weekend as well, where this came up, where the question is that it seems, as one person said, that President Barack Obama avoids the subject of the black community, avoids using the word African-American or black in his conversations and speeches, and whether directly or indirectly. And that's been a critique. And some people argue it's because, well, he's African-American, so he doesn't want to bring it up because it makes it look like he's just talking to black Americans, and others saying that that it needs to be said because there are some issues that you have to address in America. You can't address America without addressing race. I'm curious what our panelists think about what Chris was saying.
Yeah, I think that that's a valid concern. I do understand why he avoided that in the first term, because a president's first term is all about getting a second term. And he needed to be seen as the president of America, of the United States of America. And I get that. But he does have more freedom now in his second term. And I would hope that he would come out and I would hope that he would kind of follow Bill Cosby's discussion around these issues. I looked at a picture of the president, his wife, and the two girls this afternoon, and I said, wow, what a beautiful family. What a shining example of a strong family. Wouldn't it be great if he could somehow infuse this, the way to get to where he is as the, you know, moral leader of the black male community?
It's just go ahead, Shib. I'm sorry.
He's not the moral leader, so let's not throw that on him. I think that when he succeeds in some of these broad issues that we've already articulated, that will inevitably be of benefit to black people, and you mentioned black men. But I think that it's wrong to expect him to be out there trying to mentor young black kids to keep them out of jail. He is showing by example what one can accomplish. He doesn't have to go into the pulpits or have town hall meetings the way Mr. Cosby did. I think he is doing just fine by showing the example and by fighting for these broad issues, dealing with the economy, with health care, with education, et cetera.
Well, as a black male, I disagree. Well, I think he could do more.
Michelle?
No, I just think two things. A good friend of mine, Tom Burrell, who wrote an amazing book called Brainwashed. I've been working with Tom for almost 2 years now. One of the things that Tom talks about, and he insists on this for us to be constructive about this, is the power of image, the power of pictures, the power of how an image can trump an ideology, a thought, a philosophy, even a conversation, a great conversation. Being one of the only African Americans to have a large PR firm that worked with all these major corporations throughout the years, and now just recently coming into this as an author, I think he speaks so poignantly to the fact that that image, every time you see that man with his wife and you see him with his daughters, let's not be dismissive of what that transcends, what that message sends to every boy that looks like him. Oftentimes, the biggest thing you can do for somebody is show them something, just show them a positive image. I'm not saying that that's enough. I'm saying that from his position of being the first and the only African-American president, I think some of our desires for what we hope he accomplishes are grandiose. They're almost to a point where he doesn't have to do anything. We would like for him to speak certain ways about being a man of African descent. We would like for him to mentor in a very direct way. But the fact of the matter is, the office that he holds, there is no precedent for him to do those kinds of things. He is the first.
We talked about precedent earlier.
But the point I'm making is
he is unprecedented.
He is the first. So to put that large demand on the first sometimes seems just disingenuous. I think there should be some personal responsibility in our own communities to lift up those mantles and mentor that boy that looks
well,
like
he says that.
And he speaks to that. And I think that is something we should consider when we talk about what he is and isn't doing. I'm not giving him a dismissive
support
call.
For WE.
It's all about connections.
You know, he could probably do in his afterlife as a president.
The same way Bill Clinton
does. He could do those kinds of things then. He could do, as Colin Powell, for example, has done after he left government. He's become one who's a great champion of young people. And that will be something that's more appropriate, I think, the thing you're talking about, I think is more appropriate for him to take on after he's taken care of these bigger issues as president.
Kimberly.
He's been very clear in most of his rhetoric, again, talking about fixing things, and those that fixing is coming from the average citizen, that he expects us to rally around some of the social ills that we are experiencing in this country, for us to be the ones to come to the table. And so in many ways, I think it's a new way of thinking about it, instead of waiting for someone such as him to be the one that bestows upon us his ability and shows us the way, that he really is trying to give agency, or at least to suggest agency, to the average citizen, to say that he is no greater than us, and we, in fact, can be the ones responsible for changing our communities.
So, let me go to the phone to you. I'm going to, can you, because our next caller has a comment on this as well, and I'm going to push it just a tad further after our caller. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Kathy, please.
Hi. Yes. Let me just say that I think part of the problem with the African-American community is that we can't all rally around one thing. We all have these different opinions on things, and we all always have to be in opposition to what someone, what another one of us may say. But I think also the fact of the matter is that if he was, if President Obama was Irish or if he was Italian, he could really speak to that heritage. And it would be welcome. It really would be. But when it comes down to blacks, African Americans, we have to be quiet about that kind of thing. And I don't think it was, I think President Obama should have felt very comfortable discussing the economy and mentioning blacks, because most of us who voted for President Obama, we are the ones who are laid off, who have lost our jobs, who are in low paying jobs. And on and on and on. Now, I know things that Obama is doing that others may not know. So I'm still an advocate of his. But I'm just saying, because he has a predominantly black institution grant, which he will not let go. That benefits a lot of African-Americans in education. But in the same mind of Irishmen feeling very comfortable about talking about his heritage, a Jewish man feeling very comfortable, Obama should feel very comfortable, and we should not judge him. If he wanted to give his African American heritage a point, he could have threw a crumb out there. He could have. I really believe he could have.
All right, so
that's my opinion.
Kathy, thanks for the call. And let me just, and it's one of the things that the critiques here, I think, is that when you have, I mean, it's more to me than just somebody talking because that's their heritage, though that's a piece of it. But the bigger issue here is when you have the growing numbers of people in poverty, and the growing numbers of African Americans, people of color in poverty, that is an issue. That and as much as I may have, and what Farrakhan was doing in Chicago when he asked President Obama and others to come to Chicago to kind of just to tell the people he's with them, this is something that you would have expected of Clinton or Kennedy or anyone else,
exactly,
who was going to address those issues. And that's the reluctance I think people are.
Right. What is he doing for the black community? We've heard that question asked of previous administrations, and we've demanded answers. Okay, but every time Cornel West has something to say that it seems like it's contrary to the president's agenda, then there's an uproar, and it's coming from black people that do not expect this president to, or do not demand that this president get involved with issues in the African-American community. And for the life of me, I will not be able to understand that, especially in a second term.
I think we're a couple days into the second term. We're a couple days into the second term, and I think that we should all just just take a deep breath and look to see what actually happens before we instigate and or make a proclamation about what should be happening. I think we're two, three days into it, so I think we need to be fair in that regard.
We have about a minute and a half left. Get a word in here and also Kimberly. Ship?
No, I agree with that. Let's take a chill pill and let's reflect again on what was happening yesterday. I was just, you know, reminded when I looked at some notes here that, you know, a lot of we're having a lot of big anniversaries now. Today is the anniversary of Roe versus Wade.
Right.
We got the 50th anniversary, of course, of the I Have a Dream speech, as it's come to be known. But the speech was really about an indictment of the economic injustice in this country. But all of that stuff, you know, think about how far we've come. But when you think about those things, Obama was a toddler. He was a baby when the Civil Rights Act was passed in 64. Just think about it. That's not that long ago. So to see all of those accomplishments being reflected in the inauguration yesterday is something I think we should savor a little bit before we go back into the battlefield.
30 seconds, Kimberly Moffitt.
Yeah, I think I would have to concur with much of what I've heard. I do understand the criticisms being made, although Cornel West's most recent one about MLK's Bible, you know, that one was a bit of a stretch for me, and I thought was over the top because it was taking us away from the focus of what that particular event was about. But I would say the same, that I do agree that as a community, there's more expected of President Obama, and we should expect it, but I think we should also believe that there is some of it that will be actualized during this second term.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC, E.R. Schipp, Journalist in Residence and Associate Professor of Journalism here at Morgan State University, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and Tyrone Keyes. Got his new novel out, Quantum Dawn. You can find it on Facebook at Tyrone E. Keyes Jr. And, of course, Michelle back here co-hosting again. And we're looking forward to keeping this up in the new year. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will continue this in the coming weeks and months, obviously, and see where our president and this country go post State of the Union Address on February the 12th when that comes up. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer tonight is Andrew Holt. Our intern is Lila Warshaw. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, find out about the websites we've mentioned and the work that our guests do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.